The crew just assumed. He bobs his head and shoots me a pointed glance. Did you ever see her again? His face tenses uncomfortably.
A few years later, on the streets of Salish. She was strung out on Nylanter.
My brow furrows with a silent question.
It's a powerful drug,
he explains, then shakes his head, as if clearing away an unpleasant memory. And the second kiss? I ask hesitantly.
Yes, that was a few years ago, at the university. A Celtic girl, friends with Jules and me. She was inexplicably fond of me. One night I kissed her, and it quickly cured her of both her attraction to me and all feelings of friendship. She avoided me from that point on. I overheard her telling another woman that kissing me was like kissing a bolt of lightning. The line of his jaw hardens. Of course, once my mother took power, there were quite a few women who were willing to suffer through being with me. For power. For money.
I nod in understanding. Like Jenna Thorne. Vale spits out a sound of disdain.
Jenna Thorne would never have been able to handle my fire.
The room goes quiet. The only sound is the wind whipping outside. And the third? His eyes darken, and he looks probingly at me. Astonishment washes over me. Me? I'm the third. He takes a deep breath and looks down at the wand in his lap.
That night, you were coming untethered. You needed fire, and fast. Your affinity was disappearing. I tried to feed fire into you with my wand pressed up near your heart, the pulse at your neck. I tried several spells.
I remember his hands on me, and my cheeks grow warmer.
It almost worked, but I couldn't get enough fire into you. And then I remembered.
His mouth turns up in a crooked grin, his eyes two simmering coals.
Kissing me is like kissing a bolt of lightning.
He pauses, growing quiet.
I'm glad it worked.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. The memory beats out with the rhythm of my heart. And you saved me.
I saved you.
He quietly affirms. But there's nothing quiet about the strength of his affinity fire billowing toward me. With a kiss. His mouth turns up in a cynical grin, making light of it all, even though there's nothing light about the way his fire is raging.
So, was it like being kissed by a bolt of lightning?
He asks the question casually, as if my answer will be as insignificant as air. But I can feel how fraught with tension he is, and how easily I could shatter him. No, I tell him. His eyes widen with surprise. It was like... I flush, remembering, gripping at the sheets. Like a torrent of flame, broad and powerful and overwhelmingly hot. Flashing through me, it was much more intense than a bolt of lightning.
So, even worse.
It's an attempt at dark humor, but I can practically feel the painful wound ripping open in him. No, I say, my voice almost a whisper. Even better. His fire sparks hard and hot.
You liked it?
I loved it. I give a tight nod. His fire flares, running in a hot stream. When I look up at him, his eyes are pinned tight on me. I've scared someone with a kiss, too, I tell him, hugging my knees. Like you scared those two girls. It was a few years back. I hesitate, my brow tensing. A Celt attacked me. One of the miller's sons. Dragged me into a barn. I screamed, but no one was there to hear.
What happened?
He asks, and I can feel the change in his fire. An angry flare now, fiercely protective, wrapping itself around me. I kissed him, I tell him, and I threw as much fire into him as I could summon. His eyes narrow with approval.
Clever.
He flew off me, called me a demon whore. He told everyone I was a witch. The memory saps my strength, and I suddenly feel the full weight of my crushing fatigue, my fire tamping down to a sullen simmer. It wasn't the first time, I tell him. I was attacked twice in Doveshire. I'm trembling now, with pent-up anger. I've never told anyone this before, knowing that Grandfather wouldn't be willing to hear it, that he'd agitatedly wave me into silence and tell me not to speak of such things, to pray for renewed purity. I look at Vale, straight in the eyes. Prior to meeting you, I've never had a kiss that wasn't forced. Vale winces at this and nods, staring at the floor.
Tesla,
he says, his voice low and emphatic.
I will never, ever force myself on you. I hope you'll believe that in time. I lack charm, but I won't abuse you.
I nod, his warmth coursing over me, my own fire bursting in chaotic fits and starts. Charm, at this moment, seems incredibly overrated.
I'm a scholar, Tesla,
Vale says, quiet and tentative.
Or was, at the university. And I love books, just like you. I think that's patently obvious.
The corner of his mouth turns up, and he gestures around at his scattered piles of books for emphasis. He shoots me a wry look, then grows serious.
All those things you've been wanting, I think you'll find you could have them with me. May I court you?
Ridiculous laughter bubbles up. I hold up my fast-marked and sealed hands, the design a perfect mirror of the marks on his skin. Don't you think you're doing this backward? Vale laughs with me, his expression lightening.
I suppose I am.
He looks to me, breathless with hope, and my heart skips a beat. He's achingly handsome, especially in the firelight. Everything is suddenly different, the whole world on its head. Vale wants to court me, wants to be touched by me. And I want it too.
Will you,
he says tentatively,
consider it?
My head is spinning, and I can't suppress my smile. Yes, Vale. You can court me. I'd like that. His brow goes up in surprise, as if he'd never imagined I'd say yes.
Well then.
He trails off, looking around, as if he doesn't know where to start. All of his hard arrogance is suddenly gone. He blinks at me, speechless, and I'm struck by how young he looks in this moment. How old are you, Vale? I ask him.
20, just this past month.
I consider this. I thought you were older. He raises his brow.
How old?
I don't know. 26, maybe? He gives me a crooked smile.
It's those 3 years at sea. I'm weathered, apparently. And I look like her.
His features are so elegant and intimidating. I resist the urge to reach out and run my finger along the sharp lines of his cheekbone, along his defined jaw. He swallows, transfixed, his fire meeting mine.
How old are you?
The question catches me off guard. I'm 18, I suddenly remember. Or at least, I will be, tomorrow. His eyes widen.
Your birthday, it's tomorrow?
I nod, as surprised as him.
I'll take you to Valgard, to celebrate.
His gaze is searching.
If you'd like. You can see your brother and your grandfather.
He pauses.
If you want to see your grandfather, that is.
No, I do. In the wake of everything I've learned about Vale, my anger toward Grandfather has dissipated a great deal.
I'll take you to hear the orchestra.
His tone turns ardent.
We can dine on the finest food. Anything. Anything you want. You can buy anything you like.
A horde of dragons? I cheekily inquire, happiness unexpectedly blossoming inside me. Vale laughs.
Of course.
He beams at me, a defiant fire lighting his eyes.
And a wand to go with them.
Chapter 25. Valgard. Vale is quiet on the carriage, peering out the window as if deep in thought, but his secret, grasping heat is palpable and makes me flush. I realize I like how singularly his affinity fire is fixated on me. I'm dressed in simple but elegant silken garb, iron flowers embroidered in raised black designs along my tunic and skirt hem. A seamstress arrived this morning with a full wardrobe for me, compliments of Mage Fane Quillen. I smile to myself, ever grateful for Fane's kindness toward me. We ride over the crest of a hill, and Gardneria's capital city, Valgard, bursts into view. It's a sight to behold, ringing the gleaming Malthorin Bay, sunlight spearing down through dramatic gray clouds hung low over the ocean. We begin the descent toward the city. Jagged, jutting cliffs rise all around us, our carriage path slicing through gaps in the hillside. The road's sheer drop on my side is dizzying. Alarmed, I glance toward Vale to find him smiling at me, amused by my obvious discomfiture. I shoot him back a look of mock annoyance. We ride into the heart of the city to find Valgard pulsing with the excitement of a nation reborn, jubilation ringing through the air. Our flag, outlawed in all the surrounding lands, hangs defiantly everywhere I look, streaming from shop windows and lodging houses, affixed to practically every carriage and horse's saddle. Knots of wide-eyed refugees in ill-fitting black attire make their way through the city, many of them accompanied by Gardnerians wearing white armbands and acting as their protectors. "It's so strange to me," I say to Vale, who's watching me closely. "Our flag. Everywhere. Everyone dressed in our sacred clothing. It was dangerous to be a Gardnerian for so long, especially in Doveshire." Vale's expression sharpens.
"And soon it will be dangerous to be anything else."
A few days ago, I would have bristled at this, shot down his pretentious views, deeming them anchored in his privileged upbringing, always one step removed from any real suffering. But after a forced wand fasting, I see things differently. I've tasted the edges of something dark, something dangerous that rides along the underbelly of our people's newfound power.
"Look at them,"
Vale says with an air of foreboding.
"So untroubled, so sure, so ready to rain the suffering done to us down on everyone who isn't Gardnerian."
Pain slashes across his face, some private grief. I cast him a questioning look, but he shakes his head and looks away. I study him tensely for a long moment, then glance back out the window. Gardnerians are out in force, packed tables spilling out into the road at a multitude of restaurants and guesthouses, people eating, children waving small flags. I draw back, surprised by the sight of pointy-eared, rose-white Urisk women in light gray tunics and skirts dotting the city, clearing tables, sweeping streets, their rose hair tied back in tight braids. "There are Urisk here," I blurt out, with no small amount of confusion and alarm. Vale notes my shock with grave calm.
"They're Uriel, Tesla. They're the lowest Urisk class, slaves to the other Urisk. Or they were. Years ago, a great many of them fled north."
He lets out a deep breath and eyes me soberly.
"The original Uriel refugees were welcomed here and treated reasonably well for a time. But that ended with the onset of the border hostilities."
His expression darkens.
"They were promptly roped into servitude. The men to help us build our own dragon army. The women forced into what amounts to slavery again."
Our carriage slows to a stop, and Vale watches as an elderly Uriel woman with a hunched back sweeps refuse off the street, sad sympathy in his gaze. I look to the woman, her skirts edged with street dirt, her pale face deeply lined and filled with a palpable grief That's troubling to note. I was so recently a despised refugee myself, with nowhere to go. A conflicted compassion rises inside me for this outcast woman. I know how she feels, I tell Vale as I watch the woman labor.
The Gardnerians seem to be in a contest with the Urisk,
Vale says bitterly.
A contest to see who can treat the Uriel worse. It's hard to top the Urisk royalty for sheer cruelty, but I think we're currently winning.
His frown deepens.
In any case, we'll be visiting that same cruelty on the Urisk upper classes soon enough.
Good, I say flatly, remembering the terrifying blue-skinned Urisk soldiers, ready to set my family alight. Vale shoots me a level look.
Really, Tesla? Should we kill them all? Their children, too?
Of course not, I answer, startled. Not the children, but...
Where do you think this leads next?
He cuts in, gesturing toward the outside festivity.
Have you thought about it?
There's an elderly Gardnerian woman with a white armband, unfurling a Gardnerian flag from a window 3 stories up. The Gardnerian refugees on the street below applaud and cheer, ignoring the rose-haired Uriel woman as she sweeps. Our people are celebrating their freedom, I say, turning back toward Vale. You should be happy about that.
I am.
He agrees, but his troubled expression doesn't waver. The carriage lurches forward, the scene whisked from sight. I let out a deep sigh as I take in the multitude of flags flapping in the sun. Vale's grown quiet, and I glance over at him as he abstractedly peers out the window, my eyes wandering over his long frame. He cuts a fine figure, my fast mate, dauntingly severe in his dark garb, his blackened eyes only adding to his look of reckless danger.
I'm glad we're not being killed anymore because of our prayer books,
he finally says, frowning.
Or because of our clothing.
I consider this, my eyes drawn in by him, like a moth to flame. You know, it suits you. I gesture toward his clothes. Our garb. I can't picture you in anything but black. He eyes me sidelong and grins.
It mirrors my lack of mirth.
A short laugh erupts from me at this, and a tendril of his fire reaches out to pulse through me. Our eyes briefly meet, a small flush rising on both our cheeks. Unsettled, I turn my attention to the docks we're passing, instantly fascinated by the variety of ships and skiffs.
There,
he says, pointing past the line of docks.
That's my home, there.
Far in the distance, there's a raised causeway leading toward a circle of land, a traditional Gardnerian manor situated in the middle, ringed by a small forest of trees. Killing Kraken pays well, doesn't it? I gasp.
Quite well.
He shoots me a significant look.
If you saw them, you'd understand.
Vale is a quiet presence as we disembark from the carriage, the salty wind whipping my hair as we enter his sizable home. An elderly Uriel woman ushers us inside, her skin a pale pink, her ears sharply pointed, her large eyes a vivid coral. I struggle to tamp down my shock at finding an Uriel servant here, especially after Vale's words in the carriage. She smiles broadly at Vale.
It's so good to have you back, Mage Gardener.
Her accent is thick, but lyrical and lovely. She grows silent, her warm smile dampening as she takes in the sight of his bruised face.
Please, don't ask, Sanalin,
he tells her with a resigned sigh, absently rubbing his nose. Her eyes dance with amusement.
I won't.
She turns to me, beaming, and gives a slight, gracious bow.
It is a true pleasure to meet you, mage.
I can feel Vale's eyes on me, sense him almost holding his breath in anticipation of my reaction. The Uriel woman also seems to be breathlessly waiting, vulnerability showing in her eyes. I think of the hunched woman in the street, of my recent refugee status, all of us caught up in events far beyond our control. It's a pleasure to meet you as well, I tell her, extending my hand, my heart pounding high in my chest. She takes my hand, and relief brims in her eyes, a wavering smile coming to her lips. Vale's regarding me with open gratitude. Senelin brings us to a library that overlooks the ocean as she chats amiably with Vale about affairs of the estate. My grandfather is sitting in a richly cushioned chair by a well-stoked fire, his head bent, spectacles low on his nose, a book in his lap. A brief stab of hurt and anger spikes into me as I remember how he forced me into fasting. I can sense Vale behind me, his fire flaring and then banked rigidly back, his affinity lines almost vibrating with uneasy tension. Grandfather looks up, and his face lights at the sight of me, his papery skin wrinkling into an expression of pure joy.
"Oh, my sweet Tess,"
he cries and falteringly rises. At once, my anger dissolves, and a staggering wave of relief washes over me. He's safe, and fine. His silver glasses brand new. A gray-haired Gardnerian woman in a steel-colored apothecary apron springs forward to support Grandfather's elbow. She hands him his cane. Grandfather teeters toward me, and all of my remaining anger falls away. I'm overcome by a wave of protective affection for him and embrace his thin form without any malice. I throw a quick look toward Vale, who seems unmoved by Grandfather's feeble state. He remains still, his eyes narrowed severely. He won't soon shed his grudge, I realize. I take in Grandfather's clean, new clothing, the apothecary hovering nearby, his newly trimmed white beard, the healthy color in his cheeks. Vale might not like him, but he's caring for him, and that's enough for now. Grandfather bows repeatedly toward Vale, hardly daring to make eye contact.
Mage Gardner, I am honored.
He's clearly overwhelmed to have a level 5 mage in our family, and the son of the Black Witch, no less. I'm not sure if he even notices Vale's blackened eyes. If he does, he doesn't dare say anything. Grandfather reaches over to cling to my arm with a trembling hand.
Tesla, your brother, he's doing so well.
He kisses his other fist and shakily makes the sacred sign of blessing over his chest 3 times.
Tessie!
Ren bursts from an adjacent room and runs toward me. My heart lurches, and I fall down to my knees, throwing my arms around my brother's slender frame, tears coming to my eyes. We grasp each other tightly as I laugh and cry all at the same time. I pull back to look at him, overwhelmed with relief and joy. He's dressed in fine Gardnerian silks, his hair neatly cut and clean. The dark circles under his eyes are much less pronounced. And for the first time in I can't remember how long, there's color lighting his cheeks. Fragile, but there. And the spots around his mouth? I can scarcely believe what I'm seeing. Only 1 day on the expensive medicine, and they're already almost gone. Ren tugs at my hand, his eyes lit up.
Come see, Tessie! Come see what I have!
I let Ren drag me into his new bedroom, just off the library. Grandfather and Vale follow us in. 2 gigantic glass doors are thrown open to let in the unusually warm early autumn air. A small white kitten sits in the center of Ren's mussed bed and looks quizzically at us.
Thane was here,
Ren tells me excitedly as he picks up the kitten. His usual wheeze is markedly lessened.
Renfear Harrow,
Grandfather weakly chastises my brother as he totters up to my side.
Mind how you speak of our great mages.
Ren glances briefly at Grandfather, his smile momentarily dampening.
Mage Quillen,
he corrects himself. I turn and look questioningly at Vale. Thane was here? Vale's eyes flick toward mine, but he remains silent, his severe look not budging, his protective fire flaring out over me.
Mage Quillen brought us here, Tessie,
Ren tells me, filling me in.
And he gave me the kitten!
The small animal twists in Ren's hands and meows. My brother hugs the kitten to his chest, and it begins to purr.
She likes me.
Did you name her yet? I ask, overwhelmed by Fane's kindness.
Snowy,
he tells me, coughing. But it's not the bone-deep rattle I've gotten used to. It's higher up in his chest. Much higher. I want to leap for joy and kiss everyone in the room. My fire flows out toward Vale, and he stolidly meets it.
Thane's nice,
Ren enthuses, then looks worriedly at Grandfather.
I mean, Mage Quillen. He gave me this too, Tessie.
Ren grabs up an intricate mariner's scope from the bed and hands the golden instrument to me. My eyes widen as I take it. It's no child's toy, this scope, and probably cost a pretty guilder. I peer through it, out over the bay. The optics are exquisite. I can see clear over to the distant ship I'm looking at, the lines in the halyard rope as vivid as if I held the rope right in my hands. A laugh escapes me. This is a really nice gift, Ren.
And he brought us chocolate and gave me a book.
Ren points to a colorful bestiary lying on his bed.
He's nice, Tessie. I like him.
Mage Quillen is so very kind,
Grandfather tells me, glancing uneasily toward Vale.
He's everything a mage should be.
Vale's eyes are tight on my grandfather. I can feel his fire crackling like hot oil in a pan. I consider Grandfather with a resigned sigh. You only like Thane because you don't really know him. I can't help it. The thought slips through like dark water. Vale, I say, gesturing toward my brother, increasingly worried that he'll frighten Ren half to death with his withering stare and intimidating silence. I don't believe you've met my brother, Ren. Ren loses his smile and looks sidelong at Vale, eyeing him with trepidation. Vale strides forward, his serious expression not wavering. He gives Ren a slight bow.
I'm honored to meet you, Maytero.
Ren looks down at his shoes. New shoes. Brand new, well-fitting shoes. My brother dares to glance up at Vale, looks quickly down again, then seems to rally his courage and eyes him squarely. He cocks his head at Vale, as if confused.
What happened to your eyes and your nose?
Vale's lip quirks.
A minor altercation.
He looks closely at Ren.
Are you finding the house to your liking, Maytero?
Ren nods, his intimidation seeming to lessen, but then his expression darkens.
Grandfather says you're powerful.
His eyes dart to Vale's wand, his expression quickly becoming filled with an almost beseeching hope.
He says you can kill dragons, and demons, and their soldiers too. That's what Grandfather told me.
Ren looks back up at Vale with an expectant gravity far beyond his years.
I can,
Vale says with rock-solid assurance.
You're safe here.
Ren's lip quavers, and then his face falls, his whole body slumping. Vale puts his hand on Ren's thin shoulder. I can feel him pushing his fire, a hot flare of it, into Ren, bolstering my brother with the warmth. Ren's head hangs low as a tear streaks down his cheek. His mouth turns down in a trembling grimace.
I'm worried that they'll come back,
he says, in a small, rasping voice, almost a whisper. He looks to Vale, his eyes gone wide with raw, undisguised terror. Vale comes down on one knee, his hand still on Ren's shoulder.
I'm stronger than any of them,
he says slowly, his voice laced with danger.
And you are now under my protection.
Vale's fire blazes hot, and he pushes it toward Ren. Ren nods, looking relieved. He takes a deep breath, and my heart thrills at the sound of it. It's the first clear breath I've heard my brother take in over 2 years. Chapter 26 Kindred Lines. Vale stares out over the bay. A brilliant sunset breaks through the cloud cover and suffuses the gray clouds with a shimmering rose light that reflects off the water. We're out on the outdoor balcony that wraps around the mansion's top floor, a beautiful view of Valgard and the sunset-colored bay splayed out in front of us. Lights are being lit all over the city, like a growing splash of stars. Your Uriel servants seem content, I observe. All five servants here greeted Vale's return with palpable relief. The haunted looks apparent in the Uriel we passed on the way here are markedly absent.
I don't beat them or prey on them.
His words are clipped, his fire flashing. He grows silent for a long moment, as if something dark and troubling is on his mind.
Edwin and I were raised by a Uriel nursemaid,
he finally says.
She was one of the refugees, fleeing north.
He turns to me, his gaze probing in its intensity.
Edwin and I consider her to be our true mother.
He sighs and looks back over the bay.
My black witch mother, once she started to come into her power, it consumed her. She had no time for child-rearing. She hasn't the disposition for it in any case.
What of your sister Vivian? I wonder, surprised by all this. He shakes his head.
She had a different nursemaid, being a girl. Oralir, a different Uriel woman. She wasn't kind.
Vale spits out a bitter sound.
I had to threaten the woman several times when we were all children to keep her from taking the strap to Vivian. Needless to say, my sister has no love for the Uriel. But Anna Lynn, the woman who looked after Edwin and me, was very kind. Very loving. We were lucky.
We're both quiet for a time, looking out over the bay, watching a happy crowd gathered on one of the docked ships. They're sending paper lanterns up into the air.
So you see, Vale finally says, hatred doesn't come so easily to Edwin and me. I'll rescue our refugees, fight the Celtic and Urisk armies, carve out a land where our people can be safe.
He turns to me, eyes blazing.
But I won't slaughter our enemies' children, burn their villages, do to their families what they did to us. There are orders I will not follow, Tesla.
His brow tenses.
I want our people to be safe. But I refuse to become as monstrous as the Celts and the Urisk.
I let out a long breath. They were pretty monstrous, Vale. It's better that we're in power, no matter the cost.
If it means killing children?
He shoots back.
Really? Where does it end, Tesla? Where? We're simply dressing the nightmare up in different clothes. Ours.
Vale glances back over the bay. His fire is fitful, like a confined cat.
A few weeks ago, we were at the southern border.
He says in a low voice.
We arrived too late. The Celts had already rounded up about 10 of our families and...
He breaks off, anguish streaking across his face. And what, Vale? I ask him gently.
I was sent to fetch Malkin Bane later that day. And I found him.
Vale's eyes grow tormented, and he looks at me.
He slaughtered every Celt in the adjacent village. Everyone. Speared some with ice. Froze most of them. There were babies. Children. Old women, caked in ice.
I remember how Malkin killed Daisy and feel chilled to the bone.
It was more than revenge,
Vale continues hoarsely.
He made sport of them.
His eyes fill with outraged tears.
He hung them from hooks, pierced them clean through before he froze them.
I look at him with horror. What did you do? He shakes his head in obvious disgust.
There was nothing I could do, Tesla. She sent him there, knowing what he's capable of. She doesn't care. Not after what's been done to us. Before, when we were weak, Mother talked about killing them all. And it seemed like a rallying cry. Not real. Not truly the goal. But now, I'm wondering what I've aligned myself with.
His face hardens.
I'm withdrawing from military service. The war will soon be dying down in any case. Our neighbors falling at our feet like a house of cards, surrendering everywhere.
He looks back over the ocean. Where is she? I ask him. The Uriel woman who raised you. He narrows his eyes at me.
Far away from here. Safe from what's coming.
A dark foreboding pricks at me. What's coming, Vale? I know the answer to this before he says it.
Our vengeance.
I consider this, my fire now flaring and as troubled as Vale's. Images of being herded toward the barn invade my mind. The children crying and screaming. Soldiers leering at us, cursing at us, ready to kill us all. Our enemies were so terrifyingly cruel. But being grabbed at the altar, forced to wand fast by a crowd ready to rip me apart if I had indeed been Jules's lover, a crowd of my own people, ready to treat me as viciously as the Celts and Uriscat, if I had truly been Stenen. It's changed everything. I take a deep breath and push every last bit of my fire out toward Vale. His eyes widen with surprise, then lock onto mine, as our fires lash tightly around each other in kindred lines. Vale and I walk into the city, my arm threaded through his. We're barely touching, but still, we're wrapped up in each other. Wrapped up in our interlacing fire. Twilight is descending, the sky now deep blue over the ocean, black over the city. A cool breeze blows in from the ocean as seagulls squawk and wheel above us. I barely notice any of it. I'm too consumed by how closely we're knitting our fires together. Intentionally. Tendril by tendril, tighter with every step. Wordlessly. Vale leads me along a cobbled path lined with ironwood trees, their branches dotted with blue iron flowers. A row of merchants' shops are just past the trees to our left, a narrow canal past the trees to our right. The rippling black water reflects the iron flowers' sapphire light in shimmering lines, and small boats filled with jubilant gardenerians float past. My eyes light on a wandcrafter's shop, and a spark of longing rises inside me. There's a golden mage council M near the shop's door, a reminder that the council strictly regulates the sale of wands, firmly keeping me out.
Mage Vale Gardener.
A burly, bearded man is walking toward us, his gait heavy and suffused with muscular strength, his black tunic edged with mariner blue. He comes to a stop before Vale, goes military straight, and hits his fist to his heart with a dull thump.
How are you, Bronn?
Vale asks with cool formality.
Quite well, Mage.
Bronn replies in a husky voice, narrowed eyes darting toward me.
Allow me to introduce you to my fastmate.
Vale says, his fire snapped into a stiff wall.
Tesla, this is Bronn Sculler, captain of the Raven.
Mage?
Bronn gives a short bow to me, his gaze going to our fast-marked hands, the lines heavy and intricate, indicating that we've been not only wand-fasted, but also sealed. I see his brow furrow as he realizes that the lines don't extend up our wrists. Sealed, but not consummated. Bronn looks up at me, as if he's trying to puzzle us out, but then his face goes carefully neutral. He glances back at Vale. A flush heats my cheeks. I imagine that, by not adhering to tradition, to the usual wedding night consummation, I'm causing Vale no small amount of humiliation. And we're reinforcing the rumors that already circulate about him and Fane. Vale's fire has consolidated. Cold along the side facing Bronn, hot on the inside. I'm quickly realizing he's often like this in public. Coiled, ready to fight, ready to pull his wand and release his fire. Bronn taps under his eye as he studies Vale's two black eyes, his bruised nose.
In a brawl, were you?
Vale's gaze remains cool.
A misunderstanding.
Bronn eyes him quizzically, then shakes his head and huffs a sigh.
Ancient One, I'd love to have you with us again. Damned Kraken spawned before you killed it. We've a level 4 water mage with us, but he's nothing compared to you. Blasts at them, but doesn't kill the godforsaken things. Took him what felt like a fortnight to clear the pass. Now if we had your fire...
Vale is unmoved. Down the road, perhaps. If my fast mate wishes to travel. Braun gives me and then our hands another quizzical look. He narrows his eyes at Vale, as if he can't quite figure out his game.
It's taking us forever to even reach the Salish Pass,
Braun laments, his tone brimming with a deep-seated frustration.
We need real mage wind. Level 5 mage wind.
Let Fain know, Vale offers.
He's done fighting. He usually feels the pull to be back at sea.
Braun's face tenses, and he shakes his head.
These are superstitious times, Vale. You know how crews are, what with their prayers and talismans. We've even had to get a priest on board now.
He screws up his face with disgust.
Waste of resources, I say. But the men insist on it. They're taking the Book of the Ancients quite literally these days. Especially that one passage about blessings on a boat.
He leans in to speak to Vale more privately, ignoring me, as if I'm merely Vale's accessory.
Tell Mage Fain to find a lady friend like you did.
He gestures toward me with his chin and shoots Vale a significant look.
It would squelch the rumors, and I could employ him again, eh?
Vale's face shuts down, his fire rearing tight and hot with sudden anger.
I'll relay the message.
Braun gives a heavy sigh, and his expression loses all artifice.
I'm sorry, Vale. I have to skirt the waters of hypocrisy carefully, eh?
Vale glares at him. Braun looks at Vale with weary resignation, bids us a pleasant night, and takes his leave, his broad back quickly swallowed up by the crowds and the dark shadows.
They fear rumors more than they fear Kraken,
Vale says with cutting sarcasm. That makes a whole world of sense. He turns to me, a blistering heat in his eyes.
Do you know how many Gardnerians Fane saved?
I throw him a questioning look.
Well over 1,000.
He says tersely. That's a lot.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
His fire is whipping about in hot, troubled lines, riding along the edges of his anger and fear. Fear for Fane in this newly strident Gardneria. Justified fear. Vale. I slide my hand down his sleeved forearm without thinking and take his hand in mine. The second my skin touches his, Vale's fire gives such a hard flare that I gasp from the startling heat of it. The flare builds as Vale threads his fingers decidedly through mine and grasps my hand with firm pressure. His rigid wall of fire surges out and suffuses my entire arm, coursing clear into my chest. My own fire, suddenly unbridled, flies toward him and twines tight.
Gods, Tesla.
His lips part in stunned surprise, his gaze gone blurred.
It feels really good to hold your hand.
I know. I agree. As shocked as he is, my breathing gone deep and languid, my heart thudding warmly. I swallow, his fire coursing through me in pulsating ripples of heat, my own fire slowing to pulse to his same disconcerting rhythm. He rubs his thumb slowly along the side of mine, sending out a delicious trail of sparks. Oh, Vale, I gasp. That's nice. His eyes are locked on me with molten heat. I run my thumb along his skin in a slow circle, and his breath hitches, the cords of his neck tensing, his fingers tightening around mine. What's that like? I ask, my breathing becoming uneven.
It's like a waterfall of flame. I can feel it rippling up my arm. It's so...
He takes a shuddering breath. His gaze gone liquid.
It feels very nice.
He leans in toward me, and I can feel his warm breath against my ear.
Tesla, if it feels this good to just hold your hand...
And here they are.
Fane's teasing voice rings out just behind us.
The happy couple.
Both Vale and I stiffen and straighten at the same time. We quickly unclasp our hands, as if caught doing something illicit. I thread my arm lightly through Vale's arm, my heart pounding, trying to appear casual.
I've got us a lovely table just at the water's edge.
Fane's smiling at us gleefully, his cloak thrown rakishly over one shoulder. His bearing and appearance dashing as ever, the silver mage stripes that edge his uniform glinting gold and blue with reflected lamp and iron flower light. His eyes dart toward our flushed faces, my arm threaded through Vale's, and I realize he can probably read how high our fires are running. His expression takes on an edge of feline mischief.
Well, don't you two seem cozy?
He looks to me, lip quirking, eyes narrowed in amused appraisal as he leans in conspiratorially.
He's not inspiring the same terror in you that he does in most women I see.
Vale's heat is straining to get at me, and mine is just as bad. I'm not afraid of Vale, I tell Fane. Fane laughs and shoots me a fey smile.
Of course you're not, love. I've read your affinity lines. You are Vale.
He looks to Vale, his brow knitting as he studies him even more closely in the darkness.
Sweet ancient one, Vale. Were you in a battle?
Tesla hit me.
Vale tells him evenly. Fane blinks at us both, one eyebrow cocked in confusion. It's true, I tell Fane. I hit him, as hard as I could. I venture a glance at Vale at the same moment he looks at me. Amusement bubbles up, and we both grin like complete fools. Fane takes it all in one sweeping glance. How closely our arms are threaded, Vale's bruised face, our unconsummated fast lines, our ridiculous grins.
She almost ran a sword through me as well,
Vale idly comments. He tries to pull his expression into its usual aloof severity when he says this, but it won't hold, and we're soon grinning stupidly again, basking in this exciting new warmth between us, our fires reaching for each other, the two of us unexpectedly, deliriously happy. Fane gives us both an arch look.
You two are a sheer abyss of contradiction. Do you know that?
I had a nightmare, I begin to lightly explain, smiling, as if merely recounting a tale. But my smile quickly fades, remembering the terrible dream. I feel Vale's fire coursing toward me protectively now, and when I look up at him, his gaze is full of concern. Fane has grown somber, dark understanding lighting his eyes.
It doesn't matter, sweetling,
he says with an affectionate smile, leaning in to pat my arm. He shoots Vale a look of mock disapproval.
I'm sure he had it coming to him about 20 times over. But enough of this.
Fane smiles charmingly at me.
We've a birthday to celebrate. Let's join everyone, shall we? Edwin and Lucretia are waiting.
Lucretia? I question. Fane grins, beaming.
One of my three sisters.
Chapter 27 Weapons. Vale's brother Edwin is disheveled and stocky compared to his elegant siblings, his black hair mussed, clothes wrinkled, wire spectacles slightly off-kilter and perched low on his nose. He has none of Vale and Vivian's natural grace and aloof severity, nor anything of his powerful mother in his visage, save for her deep green eyes. Fane introduces everyone, deflecting questions about Vale's bruises with a vague, dismissive explanation. Edwin takes my hand in his, blinking back and forth at Vale and me with an air of baffled confusion, as if he can't for the life of him believe that his stern brother has landed a now willing fastmate.
It's a great pleasure to meet you, Tesla,
he says, shaking my hand warmly. I sense little magic in him, save the faintest tremor of earth. He's shy and unsure in his manner, yet I catch a quick intelligence in his eyes that mirrors Vale's.
I have a feeling that still waters run deep within Edwin Gardner, and I like him immediately. You're the musician, I say, remembering that night when I was still mage drunk, when Edwin was playing a violin outside the tent by the fire.
And you're the mage who single-handedly fought off a horde of Celt and Orisk soldiers,
he says with a trace of a smile.
Which explains why my brother hasn't scared you off yet.
I laugh at this and smile at Edwin, but it's hard to concentrate on anything but Vale. His fire is running so hot, straining relentlessly toward me, wanting to leap straight through the fabric that separates our arms. Fain introduces the slim, bespectacled girl who stands beside Edwin, her black hair pinned straight and pulled neatly back, her posture straight and proud. At 14 years of age, Lucretia Quillen greatly resembles her older brother, though her countenance is much more serious than Fane's.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mage Gardner,
she tells me with a self-possessed air that far exceeds her young age. I read her affinity lines as I shake her hand. She has a strong stream of water and wind magic. I look to Fane with mounting respect, remembering that he's essentially raised his sisters on his own.
Lulu was just admitted to the university and has been pre-apprenticed with the Historians Guild.
Fane crows, throwing his arm around his sister and beaming.
She's brilliant, and I certainly can't keep up with her.
Lucretia gives her brother a wry smile.
Fane likes to brag,
she tells us, obviously pleased. Fane kisses the top of his sister's head and grins at us, clearly in his element here in Valgard, with his family, his people. He's reserved a lovely table for us, right up at the canal's edge, and I take a seat next to Vale, Fane on the other side of me at the table's head. Ironwood trees and potted flowers surround us, the table covered by a rich green tablecloth and laden with gleaming vine-patterned china. Fane's frolicking stream of anecdotes pulls even shy Edwin into conversation, some of his gossip so startling that my attention is pulled away from Vale for a brief moment.
I don't suppose you've heard about the match of the season, two utter fiends united in fasted bliss.
We all look to Fane, waiting, and he savors our heightened interest.
Malkin Bane has fasted to Jenna Thorne.
Fane gives us all a significant look, then goes about serving plump fillets of fish to each of us with silver tongs.
Well, that has an awful symmetry to it,
Vale says flatly as he holds his plate out so Fane can reach it. Vale and I exchange a swift, sober glance at the thought of Malkin and Jenna's union. Fane piles my plate high with food, extolling the virtues of each dish as he does so. The food is bountiful and better than anything I've ever had in my entire life. Fish poached with lemon and fresh herbs, followed by tender lamb with mint jelly, steaming rolls, a salad that's almost entirely made up of delicate, delicious flowers. Vale reaches toward me under the table and slides his hand over mine. I twine my fingers through his, my breathing going uneven, my heartbeat racing. The very air grows hotly charged as our fires feed into each other. Vale leans toward me and whispers in my ear.
There's something I want to show you.
His deep voice sends a thrum of shuddering warmth through my body. I nod in decadent agreement, wanting to go, wanting to be alone with him. I glance up to find Fane watching us closely as his sister brightly regales Edwin with a story about her ill-fated attempts at cooking. Fane's eyes are darting back and forth between Vale and me. Vale turns as Edwin briefly engages him in conversation, and Fane shoots me a wide, dazzling smile, rich in humor and genuine affection. He jerks his head toward the exit.
Go,
he says, leaning in to whisper to me.
I can feel the affinity fire you two are throwing at each other from clear across the table.
He pats my hand and gives me his feline grin.
Go take him home and change those lines, sweet Tesla, before Vale simply explodes right here into a torrent of fire.
Vale leads me, my hand in his, down several alleys and meandering side streets toward the city's main public gardens, a lush park filled with succulent plants, blood rose bushes, and ironwood tree groves. The gardens are edged by broad canals on all sides. He guides me, his fire coursing hot through my arm, down the main path, cutting through the gardens toward a smaller path that leads down into a sheltered grove of ironwood trees. We slow to a stop, and he turns to face me, the sharp contours of his face bathed in the iron flower's soft blue light. The two of us are suddenly all alone. Vale releases my hand, reaches inside his cloak, and hands me a long, thin package, his eyes bright with anticipation.
"For your birthday,"
he says. Filled with a giddy curiosity, I set about opening it and gasp as the paper wrapping falls away. A Maelorian wand. Black as midnight with a spiraling handle, just as he promised. Tears sting my eyes as I curl my fingers around it. He's bucked some serious rules to secure this for me, likely having it crafted for himself, only to break the law and gift it to me. I'm overcome, my voice breaking. "Thank you, Vale." The heat of his gaze is penetrating and searing, so singular in focus.
"You are welcome, Tesla."
A hint of a smile plays on his lips as he watches me. His expression turns ardent, almost pained.
"Gods, you're beautiful."
Emboldened, I move closer to him, basking in the warmth of his affinity fire, breathing him in, while I consider the wand in my hand. I test the feel of it, my affinity line snapping toward it with taut, satisfying force. I can sense the perfect craftsmanship of this wand, the layers of wood thinner than the thinnest parchment, perfectly laminated. And I can sense the quality of the wood as well. Star maple, frosted hawthorn, and ironwood. Fine woods chosen to smoothly amplify magic. "I saw the affinity patterns you were working out," I tell him. "Back at your cottage."
"Our cottage,"
he throatily amends, the deep thrum of his voice playing havoc with my heartbeat.
"It's your house too, Tesla."
I swallow, thrown by the nearness of him, disconcertedly heated up. "You're trying to work from the Waltherian grimoire."
"Water spells,"
he concurs.
"I've a trace of water affinity, like you. Not much, but still. I'm trying to utilize it. I just can't seem to access the water."
"Hook the roots," I tell him. "There's a natural attraction."
"Hook them?"
"Slow the stream down," I explain, pulling my hand down in a gradual arc. "So slow you can almost see it pulse." I mimic a slow rhythm with my fingers. "There's a hook in each crest. If you layer the streaming spell over the vine spell, you can latch right onto it and pull the water through." He cocks his head to one side, and I can see him puzzling it out. "I'll show you. Take your wand and roll up your sleeve," I tell him, heat rising in my cheeks. He blinks at me, eyes searing, then complies. He pulls his wand from its sheath and rolls his tunic sleeve up to expose his muscular arm. He raises his arm, ready to cast the spells, and looks to me. Swallowing hard, I roll up my own sleeve, skim my hand down his arm and slide it over his fingers and around the wand. The entire length of my arm is pressed against his, skin to skin.
"Tesla,"
he breathes raggedly.
"I don't know if I can focus."
"Try. Trail the water spell over the vine spell." I caress his hand. "Keep your fingers loose. Very light." His hand relaxes under mine, his fire flowing toward me. "That's good. All your fire is flowing away from the wand. Toward me." He spits out a laugh.
"Yes, it is."
"Do it. Send both spells through." Vale murmurs each spell in sequence, a thin black vine jetting out from the tip of the wand to collide with and twine around the tree before us. I push my magic down against his, line to line, helping him guide the two spells together. The black vine is quickly limned by a small line of glistening water. The vine breaks from the tip of Vale's wand and falls just as the water collides with the tree and loses form. It streams down the trunk, seeping into the earth below.